Heads up, fans of the world. While you've been listening to the show, we've entered a whole new era. We now live in a time when data is the new oil. That's right, it's like black gold. Dark, expensive, and whoever controls it has all the power. For the next few weeks, we'll be featuring a special podcast in your feed called Raw Data, all about life in this new data age. Raw Data from PRX, how your information gets turned into power. Check it out.
On a Saturday in October in 1957, people across the United States woke up to stunning news. There was a sense of wonder, panic, and a lot of fear. All because of this little sound. Because it was coming from outer space. That is the sound of Sputnik.
The epical scientific achievement by Soviet Russia in beating the United States of America in the race to launch the first man-made moon has all humanity staring heavenward.
A man-made moon.
They tell us the world may never be the same again.
On October 4th, 1957, our Cold War rival, the Soviet Union, in a total surprise move, launched Sputnik, the world's first satellite.
This was a huge wake-up call for the U.S. The government established NASA several months later. They started pouring money into science and technology. Fast forward about a decade, and the United States is the first nation to send men to walk on the moon.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Basically, the U.S. won the space race.
We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Well, something similar is going on right now. There is an epic technological struggle underway with perhaps even greater stakes. This time, though, the U.S. government is not panicking or really reacting much at all, which is odd, because whoever leads the way in this technology has the potential to, well, run the world.
We are talking about AI, artificial intelligence. The race is on.
And some people say the U.S. is losing.
This is Raw Data, a podcast about how information becomes power. I'm Mike Osborne.
And I'm Andrea Mustaine. Today, we're talking about China's quest to win the AI race. We're going to start by talking about a game called Go.
Go originally comes from China. It's an ancient game. It's been around for about 2,500 years.
But in recent years, people have been trying to build AI systems that can play this game. Go is played on a wooden board with a grid on it. There are two players. One has white pieces, these round white stones. The other player has black stones. And it's a game of strategy. The goal of the game is to capture territory, but the rules about how you do that are a lot less prescribed than in a game like chess.
If you think about chess, your bishop can only move, you know, in a diagonal fashion, right? Your pawns can only move one or two squares at a time.
This is Amy Webb. She's the founder of the Future Today Institute and an expert on the global state of artificial intelligence.
I recently spoke with her about her book, The Big Nine. It's about nine companies, six in the U.S. and three in China, that she says are leading the way in AI. And before she gets to those companies, she talks a lot in the book about Go.
With Go, you can plop your little piece anywhere you want on the board, which means that just, you know, the math becomes exponentially more complicated because there's so many more possible moves. And so for that reason, it requires something more akin to intuition and sophistication and understanding the opponent, which is why the research community has for many, many years endeavored to teach a machine how to play Go.
Researchers at DeepMind, a Google acquisition, have been trying to do just that, teach a machine to play this really complicated game. DeepMind is one of the leading AI shops in the world. They work out of a lab in London, and a couple years ago, they built an AI system that they called AlphaGo.
They fed this system all the rules of Go, and then they had it play tons and tons of games against human opponents. It studied archived games. So the system learned to play Go by practicing and studying, just like we do. It learned from us, and it got very, very good. And this brings us to a man named Lee Sedol. He's from South Korea, and he is a Go champion. And in 2016, he went head-to-head with AlphaGo. There was $1 million prize at stake. Ahead of the match, Lee was pretty confident. But then he actually started playing.
대국을 시작해 주시기 바랍니다.
Please start the game.
And things didn't exactly turn out as he'd expected.
The system didn't just beat the human player. The system also beat down the human player.
What does that mean, beat down the human player?
Yeah, so you can see his concentration breaking. You can see him losing his focus. You can see him starting to go a little, like, cracking.
Oh, looks like he's leaving the room for a bit.
It was playing in a way that was somewhat unpredictable.
Ooh. That's a very surprising move.
I thought it was a mistake.
I mean, it got so good that it didn't just beat him once. Like it beat him over a series of games.
I wonder if we have a resignation here.
It could be that Lee Sedol has resigned.
Yeah, Lee has. I'm getting word Lee has resigned.
And then it didn't just beat one Go Master, beat several Go Masters, and it got to the point where they finally just retired the system because the various Go associations, which had initially agreed to DeepMind and Google's request to participate, were no longer willing. So they retired it and then continued the research, and that brings us now to AlphaGo Zero.
AlphaGo Zero was the next generation of this AI system, but there was one really important difference. With this new version, the researchers cut humans out of the training process. They just fed it the rules and said, okay, go teach yourself how to play.
In other words, AlphaGo Zero didn't learn by watching humans. The system was entirely self-taught, and it taught itself to become a Go master. Basically, it reached the same level as its parent system in only 70 hours.
And then something interesting happened. Over the course of a couple of days, the system made a decision to no longer use the human-style strategy it was using to play other humans. It discarded that and instead invented something different. It developed its own totally different kind of strategy and started playing in a way that nobody had seen before. And in fact, nobody even understood. The ways that it was making decisions were confusing. And it went from playing at, you know, the capabilities of the best human players on the planet to suddenly playing at superhuman levels in ways that nobody quite understood.
I don't know why, but for some reason, this story in your book, I can remember where I was standing when I read this part. I was waiting for the subway, and it made a really deep impression on me. I felt kind of scared.
Why? Tell me why.
I think there's maybe a tendency to be a little skeptical and think, well, how crazy could it really be? But this was such a clear illustration of the ability of these systems to go to this level that exceeds our understanding. And this was just a game. So my mind immediately went to, well, what in the world else could these systems do?
Right. I think you're right to have, I mean, first of all, most people didn't pay attention and have any sense of what was really happening or why it was significant. But you're right for that to have been your inclination, because on the one hand, a system that behaves unpredictably is something we should chase after. I mean, the whole point of artificial intelligence, at least as we understand it, is to augment our own skills and to help us solve wicked problems. So that's why it was such a big deal when AlphaGo Zero developed strategy to play the game using the same rules, but in a way that humans hadn't yet, using a different type of strategy, and it kept winning. You know, that was a big deal because it means that maybe someday in the future, we could apply what was happening during that game to things like, you know, cancer diagnoses or precision medicine, right? Or any other number of really thorny problems that we confront as humans. It was a really, really important moment in AI, and I think a really important moment in the evolution of human history. And that's why a couple of months ago, when they re-released the latest version, which is now just called Alpha Zero, something stunning happened. And I was really shocked that more people didn't, A, understand what was going on, and B, talk about it more.
Alpha Zero, which Google released in December 2018, used an algorithm to teach itself to play not just Go, but also chess and a Japanese game called Shogi. So equipped with only the rules, the system taught itself to play three very different and very complex strategy games simultaneously.
From my vantage point, this to me looked like we have crossed the event horizon. This was, to me, the first example of artificial general intelligence, which a lot of people don't agree with. But we are now talking about a system capable of doing multiple things at once versus just a narrow thing. And to be fair, it's still somewhat narrow. I mean, it's a game and it's three games. It's not comprehensive thought. But I believe that we've crossed the threshold. And that, to me, was one of the more significant events, you know, that I've witnessed in modern human history.
Okay, so let's pause for a moment to talk some basic definitions. These game-playing and human spirit-crushing systems like Alpha Zero represent really advanced artificial intelligence. And in fact, we heard Amy Webb describing this latest version as a very early example of what is called artificial general intelligence. This is what researchers everywhere are trying to build.
And really defining artificial general intelligence is very hard because there's not really a list of criteria that everybody agrees on. But basically, artificial general intelligence involves complex decision-making at the level of, or way better than, a human.
So artificial intelligence is not a singular technology. It's an umbrella term for many different technologies. But the basic thing to understand is that AI is simply a system or series of systems that uses data to make decisions automatically. That's really all we're talking about. Now, obviously, it's much more complex than that once you get into the details.
Artificial narrow intelligence is a system that can perform a single task at the level of, or probably much, much better than a human. And these AI systems are all around us, everywhere. Amy Webb points to the spam filter on your inbox, the suggestion engine on Netflix. Basically, artificial narrow intelligence systems can do one thing really well. In contrast, artificial general intelligence systems can do lots of things really well.
Okay, so let's get back to those nine companies Amy Webb says are leading artificial intelligence on every front.
These nine companies have the lion's share of patents. They are tremendously well capitalized. They are able to attract the top talent. They have the partnerships at the best universities. It doesn't mean that there aren't other pockets of research or other places where AI work is being done. However, in most every case, all roads lead back to these nine companies.
As we mentioned earlier, three of the companies are in China and six are in the US.
In the United States, there are what I call the G Mafia. So that's Google, Amazon, Microsoft, IBM, Facebook, and Apple. The three Chinese companies are referred to as the BAT. Those are Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. But again, these are the three that I would argue are the furthest ahead and the most important when it comes to AI.
How do ordinary Chinese interact on a day-to-day basis with Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent? Are they deeply a part of their lives?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, many, many, many people, if not most people, who are making digital payments at some point are using those companies to process their payments. If you are using social media, you know, which is most people, you are using Tencent in some way. If you're doing any kind of internet search, you're on Baidu. You know, Alibaba every year does more business in just a few hours on their Singles Day than all of our big shopping days combined.
Singles Day in China is a day for the unattached to celebrate their status. It's on November 11th.
11-11-1-1-1-1. Get it? Singles Day? It's kind of like Black Friday or Cyber Monday, but so much bigger.
In 2018, Alibaba, the Amazon of China, made close to $31 billion in sales in just 24 hours. They sold $1 billion worth of stuff in just the first 90 seconds. But part of that is because China just has so many people. They have a population of 1.4 billion. So the size of the markets that these Chinese tech companies reach is just unbelievable.
I mean, it's staggering. It dwarfs, like, Singles Day dwarfs what happens in the West.
That means these companies have a huge built-in customer base, which means they have a huge built-in source of data. And this is one of the things that's really important in the AI race. Huge volumes of data are what help AI systems learn.
Facial recognition technology, pattern recognition, these things typically get better and better the more data you have. And in China, since the government basically exerts control over everything, that has lots of implications.
And in fact, the Chinese government is already using these companies and their AI systems to do some pretty Orwellian stuff. It's a preview of what AI can do and what can happen when it's in powerful hands. One example is China's new social credit system.
China has many different policies. One of the policies is a social credit score policy system that assigns citizens a score based on their behavior in society. So jaywalking, which is illegal, jaywalking across the street might result in, you know, a few points being deducted from your score. And that happens algorithmically and automatically because there are smart cameras all over the place. You are constantly under surveillance. And their gesture, posture, gait, you know, computer vision and recognition technology is both pervasive and very, very good. So, you know, if you jaywalk or if you are driving erratically, you know, or any other number of things, you're going to get points deducted. If you perform meritorious service and either somebody reports it or it's picked up in some other way, you will be awarded points. And this has not yet been rolled out across the entire country. However, there are plenty of pilots and it is being used on many people. And those scores kind of function like a credit score. Like in the United States, if you don't have a good enough credit history and you go to take out a loan or something, or if you want to get a mortgage, you may be denied, right? Because your score is too low. That's analogous to this system in China.
So if I were jaywalking and had, I don't know what the other demerits are, but if I, let's say I just jaywalked all the time, it could be that I tried to apply for university and they would say, you may have decent grades, but you're a jaywalker.
Well, not just a jaywalker, but yeah, like if you have had too many points taken away, then you may find it difficult to get into university, or if you're a parent, you might find it difficult to get your kid into a good school. The Chinese government's own data show that many, many people in China, like huge numbers of people, hundreds of thousands of people in China, could not buy an airplane ticket. They could not buy a train ticket to travel anywhere. And 300,000, according to the Chinese government, 300,000 people were eligible for promotions at their jobs, promotions into managerial positions because of good work. However, their social credit scores were too low and therefore they weren't allowed to be promoted.
That's mind blowing.
It is mind blowing. And it's particularly bad if you're an ethnic minority. So there's an ethnic minority called the Uyghurs, who are Muslim for the most part. They live out in Western China. And these systems are being used to track them and to try to get them to conform or face, you know, some time in enclaves that I think are intended to more forcefully get them to conform.
Like re-education camps,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
I did not realize it had gotten to that pervasive of a point that there are literally hundreds of thousands of people who can't do things that we absolutely take for granted, like get on a train or a plane.
That's right. And the reason that this matters, I think, because, you know, if you're not living in China, you may say to yourself, well, that's really interesting and it's horrifying, but I don't care because it's not me. That's why it's important to look at all of these developments through several different lenses. So if we look at it through the lens of geopolitics,
his Belt and Road Plan,
China's Belt and Road Initiative,
Xi Jinping calls the plan a project of the century,
where China is trying to engage different countries.
16 European countries were there
for trade
a couple of years ago when it was launched.
The Belt and Road Initiative is the biggest infrastructure project yet conceived on planet Earth.
We're here on a day when China is showing off to the world.
Around 60 countries have essentially signed up to have China come in and build stuff.
But China's AI and surveillance capabilities are also probably a part of the package. And this has implications for privacy and surveillance around the world.
Part of what they're doing is building roads and bridges and accumulating debt service from lots of different countries that they'll never be able to pay back. However, they are also laying 5G and fiber and digital infrastructure. And there are countries that have authoritarian leaders who are very, very interested in the social credit score system because it helps them gain a stronger control over their populace. And to me, even if you're not somebody who lives in one of those countries, you should be concerned that China is in the process of building a new world order, one in which it has leverage through sheer numbers.
So not only is there this outward push on the part of China to kind of expand their global reach, there's also this inward reach. I don't know the right way to phrase it. Everyone wants to get access to this giant market in China, but you got to play by their rules.
This is why you see so many companies that are willing to make bizarre sacrifices, like Google has come up a few times, as well as smaller companies who are willing to house their data within China's geographic borders. They might be willing to allow their IP to be taken sort of knowingly just for the purpose of gaining access to that commercial market.
In other words, American tech companies are starting to follow China's rules so they can get access to the enormous Chinese market. They're potentially handing over their own AI intellectual property and also giving the Chinese government access to data. You know, what's a little authoritarianism when there are more than a billion potential customers?
So there's a lot to think through.
Okay, so that's China. What can the U.S. do? Because it seems like the government here has been maybe a little bit asleep at the wheel here.
You know, the relationship between our big tech companies and Washington, D.C., on the best of days is transactional. A lot of times is antagonistic. And our government for the past decade has stripped away funding from basic research into emerging and critical technologies and science. We have had a leadership vacuum now in the United States for the past few years. We need leadership on emerging science and technology in a way that doesn't prioritize punitive action, but instead figures out a way to get the big tech companies together with government and also the financial sector to get everybody collaborating in a much smarter way. I mean, that should be priority number one. And there's just not a lot of, you know, we just don't see a lot of movement right now.
And this is where the space race analogy comes back in. Tech companies in the West are doing incredible things with AI. AlphaZero, that multi-talented system that crushes humans at Go and chess, that's just one example.
But China, according to Amy Webb, is the one that has launched an Apollo mission to tackle the AI challenge. China's government and big companies are working together. There's a national strategy. They're pouring money into AI and the Belt and Road Initiative. But in the U.S., the government is missing in action. There is no real unified national strategy. And that means the U.S. is in danger of losing the AI race. But instead of the moon, the thing at stake here is power, privacy, and even freedom.
You've been listening to Raw Data from PRX. This episode was written by Andrea Mustaine, and the podcast is produced by both of us.
Our editor is Curtis Fox. Ian Koss is our sound designer. Our theme is by Michael Linder at Hot Pineapple Productions.
Additional support from John Barth, Genevieve Sponsler, and Ray Peng.
Raw Data is supported by the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University, whose mission is to produce interdisciplinary research on critical global issues. Learn more about the research and upcoming events at fsi.stanford.edu.
Funding for Raw Data is provided by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science, technology, and economic performance. I'm Mike Osborne.
And I'm Andrea Mustaine. Thanks for listening.
If you liked this episode, check out the whole season of Raw Data, available wherever you get your podcasts.